From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Outer Mission.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
La Playa.
I live in the Transmission.
Haight-Ashbury.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, pharmaceutical companies pay more than $86 million to defeat a ballot measure.
This is a proposition that doesn't really answer the questions that we need answered around the cost of drugs.
We'll explore Prop 61. Then we'll hear how a group of men are learning to be better fathers from inside prison.
If you better yourself, you give your child an example to look up to what a man is supposed to be.
And we'll hear about a queer actor of color navigating the expectations of the performance industry and those of his family.
You know, a Nigerian immigrant, and you're supposed to be a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer.
All that is ahead on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Maybe you've seen the ads for Prop 61 around town saying, vote yes for lower drug prices, or scary commercials against the prop warning that drug prices will go up if it passes. It's shaping up to be one of the most expensive and potentially confusing state measures on the ballot. If voters pass the initiative, the state will cap some of its spending on pharmaceuticals and refuse to pay any more to drug companies. But Big Pharma is threatening to raise prices on everyone else if the measure is passed. In the words of Damien Carroll, the concerned citizen writing descriptions of every California ballot measure in haiku form, it boils down to this.
In theory, lowers the cost of some state-bought drugs, but it could backfire.
Now we'll go to KALW's health reporter Marissa Ortega-Welch for some longer form explanation.
Sylvia is heading into the pharmacy to pick up her medication. I'm only using her first name to protect her privacy.
Hi. I was supposed to pick up a prescription, so I'm hoping it's still ready.
Sylvia is in her 50s and works as a security guard. She has hepatitis C. She got it in the 80s from a blood transfusion after a miscarriage.
I almost bled to death.
She's about to start taking Harvoni, a new drug that can actually cure hep C. Without it, Sylvia is at risk of liver failure. And she suffers from extreme fatigue, a common side effect.
Where I'm at right now, I'm losing all my motivation and energy. I don't want to do anything.
These new hep C drugs have gotten a lot of attention. They're some of the most expensive drugs on the market. One pill can cost almost $1,000, and you have to take a pill a day for up to 12 weeks. Sylvia's on Medi-Cal, the state health insurance program for low-income people. It's going to cover the cost of her treatment. And that's where Prop 61 comes in. The idea is to save the state money when it purchases drugs for people like Sylvia. Here's how it would work. Prop 61 would prevent the state from paying more for prescription drugs than the Department of Veterans Affairs pays. That's because the VA typically gets some of the biggest drug discounts in the country. Basically, the state is looking at the VA and saying, we'd like those discounts too, please. Big organizations like the AARP and California Nurses Association agree. So does Bernie Sanders.
It's a great idea. Drug companies made $45 billion in profit. And I have no doubt that they're going to be spending some of that money in California telling you not to support that proposition. Don't listen to them.
He's right. Drug companies have raised $86 million so far to defeat Prop 61. And they're threatening to increase the VA's drug prices if the proposition passes. That's turned a lot of groups against the measure.
My name is Lamont. I'm a retired Marine, and I oppose this misleading initiative.
California Medical Association, the professional group for doctors, is against Prop 61 too. Many doctors support lower drug prices, but worry this measure will backfire.
Hey.
Hi!
I recognize you.
How are you?
Good.
You look like the perfect baby.
Dr. Michael Lenore is a pediatrician and allergist in Oakland. He says there's nothing in the measure requiring the pharmaceutical companies to sell to the state at a lower cost. They could just refuse. And then what?
If, in fact, these companies choose not to participate, many of these drugs might not be available through the Medi-Cal program.
And that might mean people like Sylvia couldn't get their treatments. Here's the other thing. Prop 61 only affects a few state agencies. It won't affect people with private insurance or Medicare. Dr. Lenore worries that if drug companies are forced to sell meds at a discount to the state, they'll just raise prices for people with private insurance.
Well, I think there's no question that if you put in place a proposition like this, then the pharmaceutical companies who participate will try to regain that profit somewhere else.
But supporters of the proposition insist, we can't let the drug companies bully us anymore.
I think there's a lot of fear, and so we don't know what might happen.
This is Jesse Brooks.
But what we do know is the system that's in place is not good, and it's not working. So why not start with a small group and then work our way up to everybody?
Brooks is an advocate with the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. They're the main backers of Prop 61. They've raised $9 million so far to support it. They're also known for being controversial. They made waves in the AIDS community in 2014 when they came out against PrEP, an HIV prevention treatment.
This is just what they do. They fight the system.
Brooks is proud that the AIDS Healthcare Foundation is jumpstarting the conversation on drug price reform.
So I feel like if it happens in California, it'll be a conversation all across the nation.
This is a personal issue for Brooks. He has been living with HIV since the 90s. He just turned 55.
And I was diagnosed when I was 25, and I never thought I would make it. So I'm grateful. And I look good.
Brooks knows what it's like to depend on expensive, life-saving medication. He takes pills for HIV, diabetes, and high blood pressure every day. Let's be clear, though. Brooks won't be affected by Prop 61. Most people won't. Even still, Brooks thinks passing it is the best option to address the high cost of drugs in this country.
I agree that it's not a ideal written proposition, but I believe it's going to start the conversation.
Dr. Lenore, on the other hand, doesn't think Prop 61 is broad enough to be effective.
This is a small, this is a proposition that doesn't really answer the questions that we need answered around the cost of drugs and the general public. And I think we do need serious, serious attention paid to this issue.
So to recap, a vote yes on Prop 61 would limit the amount the state could pay when it buys pharmaceutical drugs. It would affect a few state agencies. A vote no opposes this limit. In San Francisco, I'm Marissa Ortega-Welch for Cross Currents.
Cross Currents is here to help you parse the ballot this year. Go to KALW.org to keep up and stay tuned for the upcoming coverage. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. For prison inmates, being a parent is hard. You're far away, but you're still here. And the visits and the letters, those small points of contact, can become that much tougher for the distance. So a group of inmates at Solano State Prison are looking for help. In a parenting class for inmates, many men are finding that being a good father starts with digging deep into your relationship with your own parents. KALW's Justine Lee takes us inside the prison.
The men mostly look to be in their 20s. They shuffle into the room in their blue clothes and high spirits and give handshakes and hugs. They pull up chairs and form a circle and look to Dr. Mary Jo Bowen, who has been teaching here for 3 years.
Raise your hand if you were spanked, because I was. Raise your hand if you were spanked. And keep it up if you think it worked a little bit. Did it work a little bit? Is that what you would say, B?
Nah, spanking just made me fight back.
Yeah,
so like I got tired of it, and man, you're not gonna spank me.
This is the Parenting Inside Out class. It's a 12-week course that provides the skills and tools needed to parent effectively from inside prison. The topic this week is timeout versus spanking.
And discipline includes punishment and reward. So we're disciplining our children to follow directions and to cooperate and to solve problems, to expect some failures. We have to discipline.
DeMarcus Rawls is an inmate and recent graduate. and he was chosen by Bowen to co-facilitate the class.
What is the disadvantage of spanking?
Resentment.
Make the child angry.
To keep the conversation going, DeMarcus reflects on his own childhood.
That not being talked to, that not being explained to certain things. I could get suspended from school for fighting, but you never even asked me the reason why I got suspended. As soon as I get home, you beating me and putting me in a corner and telling me to put my hands up for hours at a time. Right? That's not effective parenting. So what this class is about, what this group is about, is teaching us how to effectively be a father from the inside out.
Damian Brown, who goes by Nation, was in the very first Parenting Inside Out class back in early 2014. A year later, he was released from Solano. I meet up with him in a conference room in downtown Oakland. He's the father of five, so I jokingly ask him if he has a favorite.
Just got a message from my daughter yesterday, arguing the fact of who's the favorite, but there are no favorites. I'm gonna say that I love all my children equally. However, I'm very attentive to the particular bends of all my children. So I'm very aware of who needs what, where, and how much. Your parent?
I shake my head no.
You'll understand in time. You'll understand.
Nation's children were the center of his world while he was in prison. Abraham Glasper, Nation's friend and a current inmate at Solano, got to know Nation in the Parenting Inside Out class.
His connectivity with his family exemplifies the need for familial interaction. Listening to, you know, the stories of helping his daughter or his granddaughter go to sleep at night with a bedtime story on the phone, it's why he, you know, got up every day, striving to be free so that he could actively play that role.
Nation caught Dr. Mary Jo Bowen's attention too.
He didn't want to talk a lot. He didn't need to talk a lot. But when he had something to say, the eyes in the room turned to him, and he had something really worth sharing from his own world.
Nation spoke from experience. He spent 23 years in prison informally mentoring young inmates, playing the parental role he longed to play for his children.
The things I could not give my children, I gave to the young people in prison.
It might come as a surprise then that Nation wasn't always this adept at parenting. In fact, what sent him to prison in the first place represented a dark time for him as a young father. He was convicted of physically abusing his children and was sentenced to 23 years to life. Nation says he began to understand the harm he had inflicted on his own children through learning the story of one of the inmates he mentored.
Corporal punishment was heavy in his upbringing, as was mine. And he despised his dad because of it. And it was that let him go out, that gave him license in his mind to go out and say, okay, well, I'm not the big chief at home, but when I go out here in these streets, I'm gonna be that big chief to someone else. And it made me look at me and the things that I had done as a dad. Who was I bringing up in the world? What type of citizen was I creating?
Nation became a model for good communication, for anger management, for self-awareness. He was a respected leader in the Parenting Inside Out class. All of this helped improve Nation's chances when he presented his case to the parole board back in 2015. It helped, too, that Dr. Mary Jo Bowen advocated for him. She believed Nation could guide young people for a living, and submitted a letter to the warden as part of his hearing.
When I heard he was being paroled, I went to my boss, Ruth, and I said, you know, we gotta hang on to Nation if we can. We gotta offer an internship if we have one, because he's got a lot to offer.
She kept her word. When Nation was released in 2015, Mary Jo's employer, Community Works West, hired Nation as a case manager for formerly incarcerated adults aged 18 to 25. In the past year, Nation has worked with about 40 people, helping them get their lives on track.
In July, I had lost a friend, and I've had, you know, gang ties in the past, and he got shot right there on 24th and Shotwell.
That's Oscar Pacheco. He's one of Nation's clients, and he's recalling a recent time when Nation kept him from making a bad decision.
I was in the urge of doing something about it, but I didn't want to. I was really hesitating on thinking about it, and I ended up talking to Nation, and he told me if you want to go and do it, you can go do and do it, but there's nobody going to be out here looking out after your kid. And then after he told me that, he just completely changed my mind and everything. So I looked up to him like another dad.
Nation says he has one goal with his clients.
To keep you alive and to keep you free. And there is nothing that I do that deviates from that.
We're gonna look at the topic of timeout and the topic of spanking.
Back in Solano Prison, the Parenting Inside Out class is always full. It even has a waiting list. Abraham Glasper says one of the most important themes of the class is that they are there to break the cycle.
Parenting doesn't come with a handbook, and a lot of times our parents only gave us what their parents gave them. And so this is an opportunity for us to learn, you know, things that we didn't necessarily receive from our parents.
DeMarcus Rawls closes the session with some motivation.
So you start early, you start very young in giving your children an ideal parent. You start with yourself, bettering yourself. If you better yourself, you give your child an example to look up to what a man is supposed to be.
I leave the class feeling inspired by the men and their dedication to becoming better fathers, and in the process, better people. From Solano State Prison, I'm Justine Lee for Cross Currents.
If the name Damien Nation Brown sounds familiar to you, that's because he played the lead in the Marin Shakespeare Company's production of Othello, which just finished its run. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Acting while Black and queer. That's the subject of a new solo show by Rotimi Agbabiaka. It's called Typecast. The artist made his way around San Francisco's underground experimental performance scene, and he's done commercial industry work, all while Black and queer. His new musical theater show takes us with him through the hilarious highs, the offensive lows, and in and out of the pigeonholes. He talked to KALW's Jen Chien about spinning his tribulations into performance gold.
There are a lot of infuriating experiences and anecdotes in your show. Mm-hmm. It's people being really insensitive about race and culture and mm-hmm. sexuality. I'm wondering if when those kinds of things happened to you in your life, in your career, did you comfort yourself with thinking, I'm going to put this one in my show?
That's a great question. Not at first. But I think eventually I came to do that. I've written one other solo play before, and it happened in grad school, and I was in Bulgaria studying abroad, and I was in this small town, and I don't think that residents of that town had seen many people of color or black people in that town. And so I was sort of this local celebrity, which was...
And did you like that?
It was fun at first, and then it became really strange.
Stressful?
It felt really strange. Yeah, stressful, and also... it really highlighted how exoticized and otherized I was being. It made me think about ways that existed in other forms in America. And so I created this piece based on that and put a lot of my life into it.
And so where did the idea for this one come from? Was it you didn't quite work out all of that stuff in that show? And this is new stuff. But like
it's
once some, you got yeah, out into the world.
It's some new stuff, yeah. And the idea for it came from, I had written a series of articles for theaterbayarea.org. And the series was called Acting While Black. In this series, I interviewed some local Bay Area actors who are black about their experiences. And my partner, Shane, suggested, why don't you do a piece based on
these articles.
On
your interviews.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so I combined those stories with my stories and just began to explore the issue of diversity in theater, which is such a pertinent and such a relevant and such a still unsolved or issue of diversity and inclusion and really creating a theater culture that welcomes people who have not historically been welcomed in American theater, at least mainstream American theater.
In the show, you talk about growing up in Lagos in Nigeria. Yes. That's where you spent your early years.
Yeah.
And you talk about putting on your mom's wedding dress.
Yes.
And realizing that you want to be more than what you're allowed to be, mm-hmm. in the culture and the society that, yeah. you live in. So to me, that was sort of like the first obstacle in your life as an actor.
Yeah.
How did you get through that? And then do you feel like that helped set you up for challenges that lay ahead that you're talking about now on the show?
Yeah, oh, definitely. How did I get? Well, that's a great question. I think I'm still struggling with that. But I think, that, you know, putting on that wedding dress, I think represents so many things to me. It represents a growing awareness of my queer identity, or my queerness. It represents that discovery of the pleasure of play acting, of playing pretend, of acting, a part of what drew me, or what, you know, to this profession. And I think it's been a long journey for me in accepting who I am and feeling the pride and the comfort to share that with the world.
So you have a section of the piece that you can perform for us,
yeah,
today in studio. Yeah, can you set this up a little for us?
Yes.
This is inspired. This part is inspired by a real life story.
It is, yeah. As most of the show is, it's inspired by a real life.
Well,
story.
Real life news story.
This is a real life news story. It's based on a story about a production that happened in England. It was directed by Sir Trevor Nunn. He's a very renowned director, and it was a production of called The War of Roses, and it's a collection of four of Shakespeare's history plays performed together in rep. There's a 22-person cast, and in that cast there wasn't a single actor of color. He'd been interviewed about why he had made that choice. So Trevor Nunn mentioned wanting to, adhere to the historical accuracy of the script. And in this section of the play, I do a mock sort of news story exploring that that defense and the contradictions in that defense. And then I cap the news story by performing a punk rock song that I wrote called That's Some Bull Blank. And so I think there's an opportunity in all these plays to recast the world or to show a wider, you know, array of humanity. And I think it's a lazy argument that a lot of directors and companies use to justify a practice that is just really reinforcing white supremacist notions or views of what history was, or who contributed to history, or who, you know, is part of history, whether it's Western history or, you know, global history, of which people of color have contributed hugely to, you know, in their own, you know, histories, in their own cultures, in their own countries. A gang of minority actors has risen to condemn Sir Trevor's use of an all-white cast in his latest production, The War of Roses, a distillation of four of Shakespeare's history plays. The gang claims that the failure to include a single person of color in the 22-person cast is yet another instance in which minority actors are shut out of the theater. Sir Trevor defends his choice by stating that the historical verisimilitude of these plays, which feature fictionalized plots about historical figures who may or may not have been witches and devilish hunchbacks, would be ruined by the presence of non-white actors. When asked why the character of Edward, King of England, is played by a Norwegian actor, or why the French characters Margaret of Anjou and Joan of Arc are played by English actresses, Sir Trevor Nunn remained mum. As I turned to leave, thinking the interview was over, I heard these two words whispered like a final defensive parry. Historical verisimilitude. I'm Sammy Pepys, and this story has been based on events that are 100% true and happened in the summer of 2015.
Rotimi Agbabiaka's show Typecast will be at San Francisco's Brava Theater through October 1st. All the details are at kalw.org. Click Crosscurrents. That's our show for today. We have a lot more ballot coverage to come on Crosscurrents. In the meantime, you can make do with haiku coverage. Here's another by the advocacy group Spur that describes San Francisco's Prop F in 5-7-5 syllable format.
Let the youth vote. They have to live longest with our choices.
Join in with your own. Tweet them at KALW and we'll share them out. Hashtag voter haikus. Our team includes Nicole Grigg, Olivia Henry, Jurgen Klemm, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, Beatrice Thomas, and Bowen Wang. The show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liza Veal. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This weekend is one of the Bay Area's biggest music festivals, Hardly Strictly Bluegrass. The free event sprawls over 3 days and nights in Golden Gate Park. Performers from all over will be there, including Oakland band The California Honeydrops, who you're hearing now. They're on the schedule for Saturday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. 'Cause I know.